this wicked world, searching for light in the darkness of insanity. I ask myself, is all hope lost? Is the only pain, hatred, and misery?
This is Turning Left with Jason Allen.
Well, hello there. This is Turning Left, the TV edition. I am, of course, Jason Allen. Right next to me is Sir Richard Donnan.
Hey, what can I say? It's fun to be on the air. Two wild men on the air. Huh. The airwaves will never be the same.
What could go wrong, right?
I won't answer that.
Right. So, folks, we, of course, if you've been paying attention, if you have lived under a rock, we'll spell it out for you here. We moved over from House of Sound. We are now here on Newsbox.com, and we upped the ante a little bit. What we're doing now is live video streaming, and I'm sure at some point we'll probably continue to do a audio radio form, too. But we just kind of wanted to give this a go, right, and see what goes on. What could go wrong, right? Doc's in charge. He's in the cockpit. I mean, nothing's going to blow up or anything, so we're cool.
And our clothes are on. Hey, what else could you ask for?
And our clothes are on, right. So today, what we're going to do, folks, is we're going to run over some segments, make sure everything is good to go and sound is perfect, lights are good, and just so you get an idea of what we're going to be doing here in the weeks to come. So instead of having a guest today, it's just us, okay? We're just going to sit around, we're going to talk a little bit, share stories, cry, laugh, hold hands. It'll be fun.
And newsworthy.
Hopefully, right. Hopefully, yes. So, what I want to do is start off with our opening monologue, right? And so, what I want to do is I want to talk a little bit about Trump's budget. I've always considered the national budget to be a moral document. It lists the nation's priorities and is a reflection of what we hold as important. The new proposed budget by Trump and the Trump administration can be best described as a crisis of conscience. There is a fundamental shift in this new budget away from social infrastructure to a militarized state that is firmly on a war footing. The proposed increase of $54 billion in the military budget is a clear and distinct saber rattle that signals both our allies and the world at large that we will soon be at war again. You don't increase the military budget by that much without a clear intention of using it. So while we find ourselves up to our necks in new shiny military toys, the proposed cuts are going to be felt by those who are most vulnerable in our society. The poor, the elderly, the children, and women. On the chopping block are such vital programs as Planned Parenthood, the WIC program, Meals on Wheels, the National Endowment of the Arts, and public broadcasting, just to name a few. I must admit I was incredulous when I perused the proposed budget and learned what cuts were listed, by how much, and what the results of those cuts would be. Heck, I think anyone with a soul and a conscience would feel troubled by the news. And that brings me to this monologue's power word, conscience. We probably will never know who exactly it was that thought up the bright idea to cut a program like Meals on Wheels, a program that is so noble and altruistic that there's literally no ulterior motive on the part of the big bad government. As you know, Meals on Wheels delivers filling nutritional food to the elderly, the shut-ins, and the disabled. I'm interested to know if whoever thought of that mighty brain fart had any crisis of conscience as he or she wrote it. How about getting rid of the WIC program? Was there any flutter in their soul as they proposed axing the program that the anachronism literally means women, infants, and children? WIC supplements healthy food for low-income mothers, provides vouchers for baby food and formula for infants and small children. What about public broadcasting? Did he or she experience any irony when, as they were putting forth that as a viable cut, they were suggesting ending a show like Sesame Street, which if they personally didn't watch it, they know someone who did? We can go around and around on the need to balance the budget and pay off the national debt. I'm certainly not saying that there is no governmental waste, and there are ways of running the economy more effectively. I'm strongly suggesting that we find other areas to consider when thinking of taxes and departmental cuts. Let's see here. Off the top of my head, we could, I don't know, maybe start with closing the tax loopholes for the top 1% of incomes so they can start paying their fair share of taxes. And while we're on that subject of tax loopholes, why don't we close the loopholes for the big corporations too? Don't feel sad for Wall Street. I think they will be all right. It seems by doing these two things alone would help make up for any increases to the budget, and I'm willing to bet a large portion of the national debt would be taken care of, too. Let's go back to that power word, conscience. It's time we seriously examine ours if it means of ending programs that helps ease the burdens and suffering of our most vulnerable citizens. If you want to make America great again, you certainly aren't going to be when you go after the poor, the elderly, and the disabled. Conscience. It seems to be in short supply both in the White House and in the halls of Mar-a-Lago. End rant.
Good one.
Yes. That was my late night sort of venting, right?
Well, you know, but it's pretty easy. I don't think Trump has a conscience.
Right, yeah.
And if he did, it's probably in his little toe and he walks, and, you know, he's, nah.
Well, he seems to be all impulse, right? I mean, it's all knee-jerk reaction.
Most of those cuts were Bannon's.
That I have no doubt of.
Because he wants to generally restructure the American governmental system.
Right.
Well, because he sees no value in it,
right,
means that there's no value in it.
Right.
Doesn't matter if somebody else sees value in it, or it becomes a process whereby you're really going to injure people,
right,
but he doesn't know them, so he doesn't care.
Right.
When you look at him alone, caring is not anywhere on his face.
No, and I mean, and Bannon, I mean, he was and is very straightforward in the fact that he is a guy that tears down stuff. He's a deconstructist, and he—that's what he likes.
He's a fascist, man.
When it walks like a fascist and talks like a fascist, hey, guess what? It's a fascist, right?
For the most part.
Right. So, Richard, what's going on, man? How you been?
I've been good. Watching the clown cabinet go to work, and watching the fact that nobody found anything that even remotely resembled a wiretap on Donald Trump. up his rear end, possibly.
Right.
But no. And then, of course, he blames the British, which was a really stupid thing to do. But, you know, it's Donald Trump, so stupid and Donald,
right. They
go together.
Right.
It's you know, it's one massive lie after another.
one after another.
I don't know if the guy actually knows the word truth means.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Maybe they can look it up, Google it.
Hey, when Arnold Schwarzenegger goes after him by saying that you're not making America great again by cutting all these programs, and Arnie was not the world's greatest governor in California because he had to cut programs.
Right, yeah.
That says something.
Right, when you're taking flack from the Terminator, right?
Exactly.
Things are going south in a hurry. Folks, thank you for tuning in here. This show evolves and grows. It is fun to be able to, you can act, wow, this is what these guys look like. I mean, Richard looks fine. He's a TV pro. Doc, of course, has been doing this for years.
Hello.
Me, on the other hand, I barely had a voice for radio, let alone TV. We'll see what happens.
That's all right. No ties in this show.
That's right.
No ties.
We are working. We're the proletariat. We're the working men, right?
Exactly.
Right.
Or at least partly working.
Right. Well, yeah. We'll take it as it comes. Folks, every week we do a segment that is called the Turning Left the Last 7 Days, right? And since we switch days from Sunday to Wednesday, well, there's a little gap, right? But we wanted to catch you up in case, you know, your life has been busy, you know, you're a soccer mom, you're a guy that works till 6 at night, granny likes to knit, so she ain't gonna catch up on stuff. So here we are doing it for you. This is a public service, all right? And so first, our first audio bite is going to be, was actually from on St. Patrick's Day. They actually had the Irish PM, Enda Kenny, at the White House, and he kind of wanted to school Trump on immigration.
And it's fitting that we gather here each year to celebrate St. Patrick and his legacy. He too, of course, was an immigrant. And though he is, of course, the patron saint of Ireland for many people around the globe, he's also a symbol of, indeed, the patron of immigrants. Here in America, new great country, 35 million people claim Irish heritage, and the Irish have contributed to the economic, social, political, and cultural life of this great country over the last 200 years. Ireland came to America because, deprived of liberty, deprived of opportunity, of safety, of even food itself, the Irish believed. And 4 decades before Lady Liberty lifted her lamp, we were the wretched refuse on the teeming shore. We believed in the shelter of America, in the compassion of America, in the opportunity of America. We came and we became Americans. We lived the words of John F. Kennedy long before he uttered them. We asked not what America could do for us, but what we could do for America, and we still do.
Listen, all I gotta say is if you're gonna get reamed out by someone who's got an Irish accent. I mean, they could cuss at you and you could hear slang that you have no idea what's going on, but if they do it in an Irish thing, okay, great, I'm smiling at them. Like, yeah, cuss some more.
Green beer.
Richard, what does bollocks mean?
Bollocks. You really don't want to know. It has you couldn't say it on American TV, but they allow it on British TV because everybody knows that it's a throw-off word.
Right, and luckily, hey, we're not on regular TV, so.
That's true.
Not yet. Anyways. Hey, Comey. Director Comey for the FBI, he got pulled up onto the hill there, and he sat down and talked to the members of the House Intelligence Committee about what's going on in Russia. And so I want to take a listen to that. Here is Director Comey talking about Trump.
And the Russians.
Well, it's hard for me to react to that. Let me just tell you what we understand the state of what we've said is. We've offered no opinion, have no view, have no information on potential impact because it's never something that we looked at.
Right. In other words, why did Trump do it? You know, listen, we don't give opinions back and forth. Right? And so, of course, the next question to Comey was they asked him, hey, what do you make of Trump's tweets? What do you think of his tweets? Let's hear that one.
I have been authorized by the Department of Justice to confirm that the FBI, as part of our counterintelligence mission, is investigating the Russian government's efforts to interfere in the 2016 presidential election. And that includes investigating the nature of any links between individuals associated with the Trump campaign and the Russian government, and whether there was any coordination between the campaign and Russia's efforts. As with any counterintelligence investigation, this will also include an assessment of whether any crimes were committed. Because it is an open, ongoing investigation and is classified, I cannot say more about what we are doing and whose conduct we are examining.
There we go. So, if you were listening very closely, Comey admitted that the FBI actually has an ongoing investigation against the sitting president. So, like, tell something like we didn't know, right? I think the country would have been more shocked had he sat down there and said, no, we're not investigating at all. Back to regular scheduled programming. See you later.
Well, and Dianne Feinstein basically hinted impeachment is on the way. That's not much of a hint, is it, actually?
No, it's just it's what they call foreshadowing.
Yeah, so it means that Don LeCon has to get his big boy pants on because he's going to be pooping in them very shortly in front of the House when they call his rear end in to testify.
And folks, I want you to know, as dedicated broadcasters and media people, we will be showing you the poopy Trump pants whenever it arrives, okay? We'll do that for you. All right? All right, moving on. We have Fareed Zakaria, as he talks about Trump and Trump's hold on the truth. Let's hear him.
I think the president is somewhat indifferent to things that are true or false. He has spent his whole life bullshitting. He has succeeded by bullshitting. He has gotten the presidency by bullshitting. It's very hard to tell somebody at that point that bullshit doesn't work because look at the results, right? But that's what he does. He sees something. He doesn't particularly care if it's true or not. He just puts it out there.
Yeah.
And then he puts something else out. And notice again what he did at this press conference. When pushed on it, he doesn't take responsibility. I wasn't saying that. I was just quoting somebody else.
So, in my opening monologue, my power word was conscience. You've just learned that Fareed's power word is bullshit.
And, you know, I've watched Fareed for years.
Mm-hmm.
He has never used an expletive deleted, ever. I used to read his stuff. He used to be on PBS. He always was articulate, yeah, and never kind of devolved into using language like that. So I am, when I saw this, I was stunned because he is a well-respected journalist.
That really shows what emotion has to do with people who usually have a very polished exterior, right? If you're in the media, you're very your veneer is nice and smooth, right?
And you make sense. I mean, he always does great commentary on world problems, and he comes up with different ways to look at it that most people wouldn't. And so I always considered him to be in the same group as the PBS Friday News Hour with Shields and Brooks.
Right.
Always literate and fact-based.
Pragmatic. And,
very much so.
One of those old-school voices of reason, right?
Correct.
You're going to hear a cogent, well-thought-out reply or remark, whatever.
Yep.
All right, moving on, we go from the usually veneer Fareed Zakaria to the experience that is known as Sean Spicer. Okay, Sean Spicer on Ivanka's role in the White House.
Ivanka has taken on several measures to promote high standards of ethical conduct. Even though she's not a federal employee, she'll follow the restrictions that would apply if she were. Mm-hmm. She's taken these steps with the advice of counsel and in consultation with the Office of Government Ethics.
And as of today, they actually did announce that old Ivanka is going to have her own office in the West Wing. So welcome, Ivana. I feel like this is almost a... What do they call it? Autocracy? Is that when the family, the nepotism and all that stuff?
Right.
And you hear about Jared taking on a way bigger role. You hear about now her daughter sitting in with Merkel. And poor Merkel, she's sitting there looking at this lady like, what are you even doing here? You know? the side glances, you know? Like when I go off on a weird tangent, Richard gives me the side glances like, come on, dude. You know? Kind of like that, right?
And the last time we had anything like this was when the big stink went up when John F. Kennedy appointed his brother to be Attorney General, Robert Kennedy. And there was a huge stink about the fact that, hey, you can't have family in government. Well, guess what, folks? You got the clampets now.
The clampets. Nepotism abounds. Jeez. But hey, we're going to stick with Sean Spicer because he's that entertaining, right? So he is going to talk about going against the healthcare bill if there's a price to pay for it, if you decide you want to dissent. Sean, take it away.
hold Republicans who vote against health care accountable? Are they going to pay a price if they vote against this bill?
I think they'll probably pay a price at home, meaning I think that you can't go promise over and over again since 2010 in the case that the member's been there that long, but at least for those who have been there that long, and at least and even the new ones, this was a major component of the last election. And I think there was probably not a single Republican member in itself who went out and talked about this. And I think when you realize the component to this bill and that the president worked with the House and the Senate to put something together that achieved a promise that was made to voters, yeah, I think there's going to be a price to be paid, but it's going to be with their own voters. And they're going to have to go back and explain to them why they made a commitment to them and then didn't follow through. And one of the things that's interesting that people who agree or don't agree with the president in terms of his legislative agenda at least give him high marks, regardless of whether or not they subscribe to his agenda, for keeping his word and his promises. And I think that's one of the things that he's made very clear this morning. We pledge to the American people at the congressional level, at the Senate level, at the federal, at the presidential level, to go do something. And this bill, while it probably not everybody got everything they wanted, does exactly what we said. It's repealing it and replacing it with all of the principles and the aspects that we discussed throughout not only last cycle, but in a lot of these cases back through 2010.
All right, let's get down to some hard facts, some math for you. They need 22, at least 22 Republicans on top of everything they got to do it, right? As of today, right now, this second, the scuttlebutt on the Hill is there are 29 against. So they are up against it. They want to do a vote here tomorrow. So in D.C., it is crunch time.
Yeah, and the Freedom Caucus is none too happy with anybody. They are unhappy with Ryan. They're unhappy with Trump. They want to just scuttle the whole thing. But it won't happen because so many House members and senators have increase their Medicaid system in their states, and the people who will get hurt most are red state.
Yeah, we've talked about it in ad infinitum and ad nauseum almost about the voters for Trump and how if you're in a red state, it's almost like self suicide, right?
Well, they didn't. Basically, it was the ignorance of bliss.
Yeah.
Issue, right. But it's not going to pass. Right. Trump is going to be upset. He already threatened him with, I'm going to come after you. I'm going, a president? I can understand it if the guy was from New Jersey, but not to disparage New Jerseyans, but,
the
Garden State. But, the mob, that's how the mob works. I'm going to come after you and break your legs.
Gee.
If you don't pay up that $250,000.
Right. What other experience could Trump have with mob-like guys?
Oh, let me see. Well, there's always the Ruskies.
Okay, yes.
I would say that and the garbage haulers in New York City.
Right. Hey, if this was Family Feud right now, I'd point them and go, survey says,
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, the last soundbite of the last 7 days today is going to be our commander-in-chief, Dorito Man.
Da-da-da-da.
Right. And he's talking about the wiretapping claim. Donald.
And just to finish your question, we said nothing. All we did was quote a certain very talented legal mind who was the one responsible for saying that on television. I didn't make an opinion on it. That was a statement made by a very talented lawyer on Fox. And so you shouldn't be talking to me. You should be talking to Fox. Okay?
Harry Truman, the buck stops here. Donald Trump, it was Fox News.
The guy will not accept any sort of responsibility for anything he says. He never has. He never will. He, voided contracts. He stiffed people.
Yeah.
He's a con man, so...
it's what he do.
It's what he does.
Right.
That's how he made his ill-gotten gains.
Right. And for a guy that loves and utilizes Twitter so much, he seems to have forgotten that all this is sort of a permanent record, right? That people can actually go back and see his tweets where he says about the wiretapping. He doesn't mention Fox News in any of that. Just found out, you know.
Well, and that's, you know, today's media is that whatever you comes out of your mouth is going to be there forever.
Forever, right. And where are you at as a country, as a society, or whatever? Where are you at when you're getting intel, your intel briefings, or whatever intel you choose to leave is coming from Fox News?
Well, you know, it's I start to wonder about his mental condition, the way he tends to even invent words. Bigly, I've never heard of the word bigly.
Bigly,
but for him to use it as an adjective is somewhat astounding. I always thought that, you know, the president should have some decorum and have a grasp of the English language, since he has to speak to the American public.
Right.
But that doesn't seem to bother Donald. He has about a fifth grade reading level and speaking level. So,
right.
You know, anything complicated is not going to come out of his mouth, that's for sure.
Right. And you know, we have a word for it in the English language, right? Acting presidential, right?
That's
it's the standard.
Yeah.
It means dignified, poised, statesman, leader.
You're careful what you say, because it can be interpreted. You know, diplomatic language is important. I don't think there's a drop of that anywhere in his whole overweight frame.
What do you mean about over? Oh, crap. No, anyway. So this was your 7 days. You are now caught up. You know as much. Heck, you probably know a lot more than me. So you're all caught up for the last 7 days. Let's move on. Folks, today what we want to talk a little bit about is this health care bill that is going to be coming up for a vote very, very soon. It was proposed by Ryan McConnell, Trump, you know, the gang of whatever.
Thieves.
Yes. And what we want to talk about a little bit is about what they propose versus what the Affordable Care Act gave you, also known as Obamacare, if you don't know. So we want to talk about a little bit of the discrepancies between the two, because, folks, there is a huge amount of discrepancies between the two, night and day. And I sometimes feel that the people who voted for Trump haven't figured that out. They haven't figured out, I thought it was funny that they hadn't even figured out that the Affordable Care Act was Obamacare.
Right.
You know, I hate that Obamacare. We got to get rid of Obamacare. But that Affordable Care Act, man, that is great. We love that. It's the same thing, folks. And this new one that the Republicans have given out is now called the American Health Care Act.
Right. It's an acronym for what I would like to call Ryan Trumpism.
Yes. Or, you know, maybe, let's see, we got to... Citizens Responsible for Applied Physicians. Crap.
I like the moniker of Death for Less.
Death. Sounds like something you can get at Walmart, right?
Exactly.
Hey, come on down, get some Death for Less. Anyway, folks, let's talk a little bit about the discrepancies. What I want to talk to you about is the amount of people who are going to get booted off of the rolls, first of all, and then even more within the first 12 months, right? So what you're looking at, folks, is once the sucker gets, and if it does get voted through, the amount of people that are going to find themselves without insurance right off the bat, they're roughly estimating to be about 14 million. 14 million. Now, you may be, and you probably are, one of the 14 million, so it might behoove you to kind of get engaged in this and get as much information as you can, because chances are, if it is not going to affect you, it's going to affect somebody that you know.
And the problem ends up being that those folks that it is going to affect are the least able to go out and find insurance. Again, because they're going to be older, they're going to have pre-existing conditions.
Yes.
And part of what the Affordable Care Act did was it it made the playing field level. So it didn't matter whether you had pre-existing conditions, what your health in general was like, none of that. Everybody was treated the same, which is kind of an American idea for the most part, is that we want to give everybody an equal shot at the opportunity to have a decent life and health care.
Right. And 12 months into this, right, let's now skip ahead 12 months after this new bill takes effect. The rough estimate is 24 million people without coverage. We have gone back to before Obamacare and even a little before that, 24 million people. 24 million people are going to be without health care. Now, the sneaky thing about this, and a lot of people don't realize this, is what they're doing is we're sending it back to the states. The states are going to decide because, you know, the states are much closer to what's going on, and they can handle whatever is, what's ever coming down the pike.
Yeah, most of the states can't afford to do it.
Right. But even more dangerous than that is there are some states that don't want to do it, right? Look at a lot of the red states in the South. Do you really have that much faith that they are going to implement a status quo what was on Obamacare at the state level? And they're not gonna.
And block grants will never cover the cost.
No.
Because the federal government can spread that cost around. States don't have that luxury.
Right. And even if they do, even if they decide, there is nothing to make them use the block grants for that per se. You'd think so, right? You'd think, well, it's a block grant. They have to use it for health care. They don't. A lot of the states' constitutions, they can use basically for whatever they deem important as a state.
Right, because it goes into a general fund.
Right. And so, folks, I don't know about you guys, but this makes me uneasy, right? We've gone from the credo of we want everyone to have health care, we want people to be taken care of, to back to the same old trickle-down, hey, I'm going to worry about myself, goodbye, God bless, hope everything works out for you, right?
Well, you know, what they're really creating is honest-to-God death panels. Because a lot of people will die from not having reasonable health insurance, or bankruptcies will then skyrocket again because most bankruptcies in America were due to health problems, not due to, the business went south. It was because they had a catastrophic illness. It took all their money away. People lost houses. They lost all sorts of things. And when you look at it from the perspective of the rest of the industrialized world, America is the only country that does not have universal health care for all its people.
Right.
A travesty. The wealthiest country in the world doesn't have the common sense to give their people health care. Because if they did, they'd find, like in other countries, that the cost per person for healthcare dropped dramatically when they had a single-payer universal coverage system. It's been that way in Europe, Britain, since 1953.
Right.
The rest of the world, Japan, you name it, they have it. And the people believe in those countries that it's worth paying for because they get quality of service. I know several people that are Canadian citizens, and all the blabbering from the Republicans they saw as complete hogwash. There was no waiting lines. If you had a problem and you needed emergency or you needed to see a doctor for a real medical issue, you get in right away. Now, if you wanted elective surgery to fix your nose, that you'd have to wait for.
Right.
But that's just common sense.
Right. And then factor in also bureaucracy, right? Like if they go to like sort of death panels or a panel anywhere, you propose what you want done or you propose whatever, and it's going to take them who knows how long to figure out if they want to do it at all, B, how much they may want to pay for it, and C, how much of a priority is it?
Yes, and the insurance companies, prior to the ACA, they could just say, sorry, we're not going to pay for that. And, you know, you right. need chemotherapy. Yes, but you're, you know, you're 85, and so we just don't figure that it's cost-effective to give an 85-year-old two or three more years of life because of their age. Not because it would be the best thing, honest thing to do.
Right.
It would be compassionate because everybody wants to live as long as possible. That's not going to happen when the ACA goes away.
Right. Yeah, because when you think of the GOP, you think of the word compassion, right?
Not really.
Right. You know, the CBO has determined that this Trump care, Ryan care, whatever you want to call it, would marginally reduce the deficit, and it would be reducing about $30 billion a year, right? Which sounds great, except we are in a $19 trillion economy. So when you factor $30 billion versus $19 trillion, it's not that much of a dent.
It's pocket change.
Pocket change, right. So we talked about the amount of people that are going to get booted off. Oh, yeah, by the way, let's throw in another good nugget for you, right? The pre-existing conditions. Yeah, they're back again, right? If you have a condition that was under Obamacare, it's no longer. Which means now you're stuck again, this time without insurance, because the insurance company is going to say, we don't want to cover this guy.
That's correct. See, they want the people who are healthy that are going to pay premiums rather than have to give out money.
Right.
I mean, that's basically the insurance company model. Take it all in, don't give it out.
Right.
And so your shareholders get a big return on their investment. But in reality, what people will do is if they get thrown out of their insurance and they have a pre-existing condition, they're going to have to pay through any orifice that's available because they won't be covered. They'll be in that high-risk pool, which means it's going to cost a fortune.
Right.
And I remember when I left the school district and I got on COBRA, which was where they gave you the bridge to go get your own, and I found that not even having pre-existing conditions, and I was in my 40s, they wanted $600 a month.
That's crazy.
It is crazy because I wasn't getting, I was pretty healthy. I wasn't getting $600 a month of return on my health care investment. That's the way it's going to go. That's so what it's going to be.
So, if you're in, let's say, your early to mid-60s, you've worked your whole life at being a teacher, a underappreciated and underpaid job, you're literally finding out when you are supposedly looking forward to the golden years of your life that, oh yeah, by the way, your health insurance now is going to probably double to triple, right?
Easily. And well, it was for many Americans, the health costs were larger than their mortgage costs.
Right, yeah. And do we really want to go back to the days of grandma and grandpa deciding, can I afford my meds or do we have to go without food?
Correct. And that was real. That was not an imagined thing that somebody thought up to say, hey, this is a good reason we should have it. It was true.
Yeah, it was true. And one the good thing that never got talked about with the Affordable Care Act was the oversight.
Correct.
The amount of regulation that they put in place to safeguard against, health insurance manipulation, right? Health insurance is figuring, well, if we got to do this, we're going to jack up the price by so much percent, and you're going to have to pay the difference. They put in safeguards for you so you wouldn't have to deal with the insurance companies on that level. Well, guess what, folks? No more oversight, which means you are back to taking it in the shorts, and you're at the mercy of what the suits want you to pay.
That, unfortunately, that's exactly what's going to happen. There is no way around it, because Americans, I don't know any Americans that don't want health care for themselves, their children, their aging parents. It should be Something that we expect for the wealthiest country on the planet.
Right. Somehow another, we've gotten it backwards. We think of it, it's a privilege, right? That we are lucky if we have health insurance. It's a luxury. And most of the civilized world, it is a staple as much, it's a given.
Yes, and because the rest of the world, as our health care costs were rising because of a variety of issues, the insurance company, people not having insurance, so they go to emergency, which is extremely expensive. Yeah. Other countries don't have that running away out of control healthcare costs because they have a single payer system,
right,
and it's universal for everybody. And in other countries, they have a much bigger push for wellness. Get in there, get checked once a year, prenatal care, which is free, all those things that help people maintain a healthy lifestyle.
Yes.
Rather than what we have in America, where we push an unhealthy lifestyle.
Right. It's all reactionary.
Absolutely.
So, closing thoughts on this, folks, is most people are going to have to become re-engaged in the types of insurance that they have, what all that entails, because when you dismantle Obamacare and you go to this new one, okay, what is going to happen is any oversight that you were depending on to be a buffer between you and the system is no longer there, which means that you're on your own.
It's going to be the Wild West again.
Exactly, right. So get engaged. You know, there are so many, the web is full of sites where you can learn, you can download this American Healthcare Act. I did on a PDF form. I read through it all. You can too. You can know exactly what they're doing. And so when you read it, and you will be outraged because there's nothing good in it, for gosh sakes, get on the horn. Call your representative, call your congressman, call your senators. Call the governor, call whoever will listen and tell them that, you know, this isn't right. And you're elected for us. Please, you know, you may want to stand up for this one.
Yeah, and at least stand up at one of the town hall meetings that people seem to be ducking now because the GOP is having their own constituents who are Republicans come out and be extremely upset about it. So they're actually running and hiding.
Or refuse.
That's the same as running and hiding for me.
It all ends somewhere in a basement somewhere.
Right.
Folks, so get engaged, folks. That's the last thing I'm going to say on that for right now. If you've listened to the show at all, you know that we do a Turning Left poll. Okay. What we do is we send our mighty army of interns out on the street and they canvass the whole metro area, asking a basic question and getting the answers, and then what they'll do is they'll bring it all back together. They'll sit around this giant table somewhere in our executive lounge area, and they will call through them all and decide which ones are the most popular in sequential order. So, we have a brand spanking new Turning Left poll for you tonight. And the Turning Left poll is the 10 warning signs that you'll get screwed over in the Trump-Ryan healthcare plan. All right. Coming in at number 10. Breathing is considered a pre-existing condition.
No.
Yes. Number 9. A selection of 3 packages will be offered. These packages are loser, tremendous, and huge.
Oh, you forgot death.
Death. Well, that's the 4th one, and you don't find that out until your room temperature. So that's just the way that is. Okay, number 8, an explanatory pamphlet entitled "If You're in Pain, It's Obama's Fault." You like that?
Hey, I like it, and they can actually put it to their forehead.
Right, like a post-it note right
exactly.
There.
Hey, I'm not in pain. I've got this letter stuck on my face.
Right. Number 7. Instead of a lollipop, your child will receive a Make America Great Again hat. Remember, I used to go into the doctor's office and he'd say, "Oh, you're a good kid. Here's a sticker. Here's a lollipop."
Right, right.
So we're not going to do that anymore. We're just going to give them hats. So they make America great. Kids, oh, look, it's a hat.
Well, you know what? They'll be way too big for the kid, and the kid will go, "What is this? I want the lollipop anyway."
But Uncle Earl will think it's snazzy.
Oh, well, that's Earl the Pearl. What can I say?
Earl the Pearl. Number six. Your physical turns into a TSA pat-down.
Yes, and you have to hope that they're going to have a gender-appropriate person patting you down.
Right. But you see, that's before when they thought about things like that. They're just going to, like, shove you in a room and...
Oh, lock the door.
Right. Okay. Number five, your ethnicity questionnaire only gives two choices, white and dirty foreigner.
That's kind of the way it really is now anyway. They just have a whole bunch of other choices.
You know what's cool about doing streaming video, Richard, is you can look at the camera and do that, you know, the pregnant pause. Number four. Oh, it's awesome. I could get used to this. Oh, okay, number four. The official sign-up website has a Kremlin URL.
Hey, works for Putin, works for Trump.
That's right. Number three on the 10 warning signs that you'll get screwed over in the Trump-Ryan healthcare plan. Your test results phone call will be Sean Spicer's recorded voice denying that there ever was a test.
Yes, or you could get thrown out of the fourth floor window like the poor guy that was a key witness did in Russia yesterday.
That's the express line.
Oh, that's the express line.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, yes. How fast can you get to the bottom of this?
Very quickly. Number two, all copays are to be sent directly to the 1%.
That makes a lot of sense. Why, you know, bother having 14 or 15 people handle $5 or $6 million a day?
Right. I mean, why mess around with the middleman, right? Let's just take it exactly to the first percent, you know, the 1%. It's going to go there anyway, so save some time, right? All right, folks. The number one warning sign that you'll get screwed over in the Trump-Ryan healthcare plan. Number one. The slang changes from Obamacare to don't care.
I like it. It's actually the truth because they don't care.
Folks, if you had any comments about this top 10 poll, if you have any hate mail or whatever, feel free to email them to Doc Normal, and his email is... I'm just kidding. I'm not going to do that. You can send it to me. I'll... You know, I may read them, I may not. I may use them as tissue. You never know.
Hey, you know, every once in a while a gem will come in and we'll use it on the air.
A gem. That's right. We only deal in gems around here, folks.
Hey.
Right. Okay. So, usually if you were listening to the audio show, you would say, hey, this is the point in the show, right, where Jason... shuts up and turns it over to Sir Richard because Sir Richard is a sage. And the more Sir Richard expounds upon life, the better you're going to be, right? So, let's turn it now over to Sir Richard. Sir Richard, what have you got for us today, man?
Well, kind of like sage, but I like basil better. Boom. This week's World's Greatest Putts of the Year Award goes to Paul Ryan, the sociopath, Speaker of the House, and the Freddy Krueger stand-in from Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin. Mm. To use an apt Hollywood Western quote, man speaks with forked tongue. Yesterday, Paul Ryan attempted to explain why up to 24 million people will be denied health care they currently have for Trump care, which is also known as death don't care. The Republican health plan is not really a plan. It is simply trying to obscure what they're trying to do, which is a massive billion-dollar, more than $1 billion, shift of money from the poor to the rich.
Right.
And that goes right along with why Don the Con won't release his 2014 through 2015 taxes, right, because it would likely show he was laundering money for the Russian mob through one of their shell corporations. He had to borrow hundreds of millions to cover his losses and bankruptcies, and the only place he could get the cash, since the Saudis got burned and they won't lend him a penny, was from the Russian oligarchs, Putin, and the Russisky Mafia, otherwise known as the Russian Mafia. Show us your 2012 to 2015 tax returns and prove me wrong. I am not wrong. There is money laundering. So for the folks who are out there that don't know what money laundering is, let's go and learn about money laundering 101. First, you need a person with lots of dirty cash, which in Russia, there seemed to be a lot of dirty cash running around from not only the oil, but the white slave trade and all sorts of stuff. So you get a guy who's got a lot of cash. Second, they need to have somebody who's not going to ask any questions, because the bank won't accept. They can't launder money. There's an international rule against it, which can put the guys in jail and stop the bank from working. So you take, for example, as what actually happened. Here's a perfect example of money laundering. An extremely wealthy Russian guy like Yuri Milner, who overpaid Donald Trump $100 million, or another one, Dmitry Rybolov. Dmitry, if I pronounced it wrong.
Say that five times fast.
Yes, who wants to buy one of Don the Con's properties for double what it's worth. So the Russians pay in this extra money well over the asking price. Clearly, it's got to be a fairy tale. But no, it's not. Because with a pull of a lever and some smoke and mirrors, the transaction is finished. And amazingly, it's now all clean money, because it's gone through a sale of a residence or property or something like that. Right. Except the problem that Don didn't realize is that money laundering is a racketeering, banking fraud, mail fraud, and there are state and federal felonies, which would happen. And that's what's going to come out from his tax returns. And that also leads to a felony like that. Money laundering is considered a high crime in terms of the articles of impeachment in the U.S. Constitution. It actually says the words high crime.
Right, yeah.
So it's not just a phrase that gets thrown around. It's part of Article 2, Section 4, Article 2 of the Constitution. The President, the Vice President, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. The key word is Vice President and all other civil officers.
Right, yeah.
So you could have a house cleaning like no other.
A bonanza.
Oh my God, Sears couldn't even accomplish this kind of a house cleaning.
Right. Yeah, if Sears lasts for much longer, there was actually hit the wire today. Sears has told their major stockholders and investors that they may not be able to stay afloat, and they may be going out of business.
Wow.
Yes.
And a very old company, too.
Very old company. And remember, they still own Kmart.
Yes, they do.
So not only are they going down themselves, they're taking other companies down.
And think of all the jobs that are going out the window. And in business evolutionary systems, that's companies come and go. They have real lifetimes.
Right.
The lifetime of many brick-and-mortar companies has been shortened because of the Internet.
Sure.
And people are buying online rather than waltzing into whatever, getting in their car, driving, it's raining, they've got a cranky kid, so they don't want to really go shopping, whereas they can sit at home and go type, send, here's the cash, and it arrives at your doorstep. Well, hey, works for my son. That's where he buys everything.
Right. I remember, this is a blast from the past, and I know this is turning into the nostalgia hour, right? But the three big ones I remember in my youth was, of course, Sears.
Right.
Sears Roebuck, JCPenney.
Yep.
And then the now defunct Montgomery Ward's.
That's right. They were the triad of your department stores that were for the common folk, unlike, you know,
right.
I'm trying to think of Saks Fifth Avenue.
Sure, sure.
Or Neiman Marcus.
Right.
Or those places where you couldn't get through the door if you were wearing dirty clothes.
Mm.
Unlike Walmart.
That reminds me, Richard, this hour is sponsored by... I'm kidding, it's not Walmart. But I always love sitting back and I love listening to you because I never know what's going to go on. And it's almost like Christmas morning, right? Where you're like, I see that package. I know there's wrapping paper, but I don't know what's underneath it, right? I got to rip it open to find out to the good stuff. And so I love listening, and just I sit back with kind of like, you know, the half smile on my face. Like, yeah, this is going to be great. This is going to be great. Folks, every week, usually most every week on the show, we have something called Cause of the Week, okay? What we do is we highlight and spotlight a local nonprofit or a local charity or whatever, and we kind of help, you know, spread the word about it and try to get you involved with it. Now, one of the major tenets of the show is we believe in grassroots volunteering, right? We believe that in the trenches, the everyday sort of stuff, that you can get re-engaged in society and help out. And so this week's Cause of the Week is Meals on Wheels. Yeah, right? We were talking about that in the opening monologue, Meals on Wheels.
Yes, Don the Con wants to cut it.
That's right. The number of seniors in our country will grow exponentially over the coming years. Meals on Wheels is a proven public-private partnership that effectively addresses the challenges of aging by promoting health and improving quality of life for our nation's most vulnerable seniors. By leveraging existing Meals on Wheels networks, they have the opportunity not only to keep seniors at home, but also save billions in tax dollars by keeping them out of more costly healthcare settings. So, folks, Meals on Wheels is one of those programs that there is no ulterior motive. What they literally do is help bring food to the elderly, the shut-ins, and the disabled. It is a noble and a just one of those great services that cannot afford to go the way of the dodo. So, if you say to yourself, "Hey, Jason, I want to help out somewhere. I want to volunteer. Hey, I saw Meals on Wheels. How do I get involved with that?" Let me tell you, Meals on Wheels. Right now, you can go to www.mealsonwheelsamerica.org. Or you can email them today at info@mealsonwheelsamerica.org. Or, hey, give them a phone call. Their number is 1-888-998-6325. Once again, 1-888-998-6325. And so I want to put this on a level that if you're in Oregon right now, where we, you know, broadcast from, I want to give you some stats here that will kind of bring it home to you, right? Make it a little bit more tangible for you. In Oregon, there is roughly 217,779 elderly isolated and living alone that obviously are a part or eligible for the Meals on Wheels program. 115,301 are threatened by hunger. That is a very real stat and a very real problem in the state. Also, there is 241,553 that are living in or near poverty. So you can see by those numbers how important and how vital the Meals on Wheels program is, and not only in our area here in Oregon, but your area wherever you are around the country. So please get involved. They need your help now more than ever. If it does get axed, and they're going to have to rely solely upon private funds, your valued efforts and your valued commitment to Meals on Wheels can make all the difference. So give them a call today, www.mealsonwheelsamerica.org. There you go. That is our cause of the week. If you're on our Facebook page right now, you can see that, and you can follow the link and get involved. So please do that. Now, the next thing we like to do, usually in the week, is if there's a book out there, we do a Turning Left book endorsement.
Hey, I like it.
And so this week's book endorsement is Across That Bridge, which is authored by Representative John Lewis out of Atlanta, Georgia. He was an icon in the civil rights
movement. He still is an icon in the civil rights movement. He was on the bridge and got beaten up.
Yes. Right. Fractured skull. Yep. In and out of a coma for like 34, 35 days. He was a chairman of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and played a key role in the struggle to end segregation. Despite more than 40 arrests, physical attacks, and serious injuries, John Lewis remained a devoted advocate of the philosophy of nonviolence. He is the co-author of the first I know Doc is going to love this. He wrote a line of graphic novels, which are actually, for graphic novels, are kind of on their bestseller list, right?
Right.
Which I think it's kind of cool. He's trying to bring the younger generation and teach them something in a way and reach out to them in a way that they, you know, obviously understand graphic novels. Okay? He has also written books that have won the National Book Award. He's been number one New York Times bestselling author, and he's a recipient of numerous awards from the national international institutions, including the Lincoln Medal, the John F. Kennedy Profile and Courage Lifetime Achievement Award, and the NAACP Springham Medal, among others. And he lives in Atlanta, Georgia. Across That Bridge, faith, patience, truth, and love are what he breaks it down, the chapters and the areas in, and he talks about his experiences in his life and how you can feel engaged again and how you feel that maybe you can make a difference. And he has a way about him, his way of writing, his way of speaking, and it's a very emotional and a very very touching book. And folks, it may be an overnight book. It's like roughly 170, 180 pages, and you can finish it overnight. So get on that, read it. There will be a pop quiz next week. Richard is a teacher, so he hands out pop quizzes.
Was a teacher.
Well,
I've retired. I have the scars to prove it.
Listen, you may have been once a teacher in the classroom. Now you're in the classroom that is turning left.
It's the classroom in the sky.
That's right.
That's exciting.
The classroom of life. That's right. So, folks, once again, if you're on the Facebook page, you can jump on there. I got it all linked up for you. You can follow it. It'll take you to Amazon. You can buy it dirt cheap. And, hey, enrich your life and learn something, right?
Absolutely.
That's what it's all about. So, you know what? We are getting down to the end of it, Richard.
Right. I only have one other issue that I think people really could grasp, get a hold of, and do something. And that's called, and it's what I call my resistance is never futile tip. So I want everybody out there who's watching after the show to go to ResistBot, ResistBot.io, and follow the instructions. This bot will turn your text message into a real letter to your congressperson or senator as an instant fax in the correct format for, you know, your senator to receive it. It's free. I done it. Believe it or not, faxes have a far greater impact on politicians because it's just like them receiving a letter, real paper. So they look at that as somebody's taken more time to actually do something than just either email or make a phone call.
Yeah.
You can sign your letter however you'd like. They only ask for your zip code. It's a sane way to make a greater impact. And you could send a text every day. So they'd get a fax in whatever state you're living in every day to remind them that they should get rid of Neil Gorsuch.
Right.
He should not make the Supreme Court. They shouldn't vote this way or they should vote that way. It gives you a chance to really communicate with your representative, and they're supposed to represent you, the constituency. So just go to that website, follow the simple directions, and you'll be sending a letter out or letters out in 5 minutes. It's a wonderful way. I'll repeat this next week too. Mm-hmm. I've already sent out letters. I'm going to be inundating people. Why not?
Why not?
It's their job to respond to our concerns and issues as Americans.
Got it. Hey, I'm going to go off script a little bit here. You mentioned Neil Gorsuch and his hearings for vetting and all that fun stuff. What did you think of it so
well,
far?
I thought the guy reminded me of, he was a weasel in that he never answered the questions.
There you go. Yeah.
He was like a snake oil salesman that was constantly diverting, using the English language, kind of like, you know, probably won't like this, but Bill Clinton, when he parsed the word is.
Yes.
So when you get people up there who cannot actually answer a question is asked, and
right,
I watched Al Franken really pound on him to get him to answer just a simple yes or no. He couldn't even do that. Is that the kind of person you wanted to be making decisions for on the Supreme Court, whether you have a right to choice, whether you have a right to choose the bathroom you want to use, whether you have a right to choose the person you want to marry?
Right.
They are all up for grabs.
Right.
Not to mention desegregating schools. I mean, the list is enormous.
Right.
The big one is going to be the gerrymandering issues and Citizens United.
Right.
And so if he gets on, you can bet that nothing is going to change. The courts will not come into the 21st century.
I agree. I totally agree. You know, I'm such a weird guy, right? So when I'm watching this stuff, other people just watch it and like, oh, wow, yeah. I'm on a whole different level, right? My whole thing, folks, is I was watching it yesterday, and I had a counter going how many times Gorsuch said the word golly and gosh, okay? During the time I watched him, he said gosh, Richard. He said gosh 17 times. Nobody says gosh that much.
Especially
right?
If they're an attorney or a judge. I mean, usually the English language is designed to be as specific as you want. Golly and gosh just don't wash as specific.
Right, but to go into what you were saying, it was so, his answers were so plastic, right?
Right.
He playing the Boy Scout, oh golly, gosh, gee whiz.
Right.
Gee golly willikers.
He looked like the common man, kind of like...
he looked like a guy trying to play the common man.
Right. I remember Adlai Stevenson used to pull the same thing. He'd wear shirts that were worn at the collar and on the cuffs, so he didn't look like what he really was.
Right, an academic. Intellectual.
So Gorsuch really is just doing another one of the Don the Con moves of pulling the wool over, once I get in, all hell will break loose.
All hell will break loose. Folks, all hell will break loose every week here on Turning Left. What I want you to do is I want you to go on Turning Left's Facebook page, www.facebook.com/turningleft, right? Get on there, say, hey, Jason, I saw it, and Richard was great, but you stunk. And tell us your thoughts, what we can do better, what I can do better, and what we can do to make the show better.
Send in questions. If you have questions or topics that you feel are of major import, let us know.
That's right. And starting next week, we're actually going to have a brand new Turning Left phone number. And it has that brand new Turning Left phone number smell to it, too, right? And I'm going to give you that number right now so you're ahead of the ball game, you're ahead of the curve for next week. The brand new Turning Left hotline is 503-673-9988. Once again, 503-673-9988. Next week, you'll be able to actually talk to us. Hey, isn't that great? Yeah?
So could be scary.
Could be scary, could be fun, could be scary and fun. hey. So what I want you to do is keep that in your noggin all week, and I want you to drop us a line on email. Say, hey, you know, Richard was great. Jason, you suck. And come back next week. We're going to have more hijinks, hoopla, merriment, and monkey shines for you. And before we get off the air tonight, I want to thank everyone here at Newsbox, and I want to thank what I privately call my Yoda, and that is Doc Normal. He's a video mad scientist, right? Oh, I'm not kidding, right? So first time we show up, right? I know I'm outing him right now, but I don't care. We're going for it. So first time I show up, and he says, "Hey, come on down to the studio and stuff," and I go down the stairs, right? And I'm like walking into, and I walked into, you got all these lights, you got this, you know, really cool studio and everything, and I gotta tell you, man, he is running a first-class operation here. The dude seriously knows his stuff, and I am tickled pink and humbled just to be a part of it.
Hey, you know, a tech wizard is always a wonderful thing to have. It beats the Wizard of Oz any day.
Right. And if you really want to get Doc really mad at you at the spur of the moment, just like that, right? Just look at him and say, "Hey, Doc, what does this button do?" And then basically you find yourself outside.
Looking in.
Right. Again, I can do the pregnant pause on TV, right?
Yes, next. There's no such thing as dead air.
Right. Right.
So dead people, but
not well, there. Yeah, that's after the healthcare plan.
That's
gets
true.
Effect. Folks, it has been wonderful here hanging out with you guys today. I want to thank Sir Richard.
It's been wonderful to be here.
And we will be back next week, turning left with all of us. Good night, everybody. Good afternoon. Bon voyage.
Have a great day. Have a great day.